Thanks for joining us. I'm Catty Kay of the BBC, sitting in for Diane Rehm. A year after Barack Obama won a historic election, Republicans picked up big wins in Virginia and New Jersey yesterday. And Democrats took a House seat that's been held by Republicans ever since Ulysses Grant occupied the White House. Joining me in the studio to discuss the results and sort out the different implications are Democratic pollster Jeff Garin of Peter Hart Research Associates, Republican pollster Whit Ayres of Ayres, McHenry & Associates, and John Harris, he is Editor-in-Chief of Politico. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Great. Good to be with you. Good morning.
We are also joined on the phone from Richmond, Virginia, by Larry Sabato. He is the founder and director of the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. And Larry, I said you're in Richmond, assuming you might have been there for the elections last night, but perhaps you're in Charlottesville after all.
I'm in Charlottesville, Caddy.
Good to speak to you, Larry. How do you explain what happened in Virginia last night?
Well, it's actually very easy in mechanical terms. Democrats didn't show up and Republicans did. This was a shockingly small turnout. Actually, I think it's going to turn out to be less than it was 4 years ago for governor, a little under 2 million votes, 39-40% of the electorate, compared to last year's almost 3.8 million. So in other words, we lost half of the electorate, nearly half of the electorate in just 1 year. Well, who showed up? The Republicans. They were charged up. They were enthused. They liked their candidate. They were very unhappy with many of President Obama's policies. And the Democrats, we've learned, and I think this will concern Democrats for 2010, if President Obama isn't on the ballot, apparently it's very, very difficult to get minorities, the young, the new suburbanites who voted for Obama to turn up at the polls. And this was also seen in New Jersey. So it's not just a Virginia phenomenon.
But hold on a second, Larry. A couple of years ago, you told me that Virginia was the new swing state. You weren't wrong, were you?
I'm never wrong. Thank you for pointing that out. But no, it is a swing state. In fact, it swung from the Democrats to the Republicans. Eventually, it will swing back to the Democrats again. And remember, when the big turnout occurs again in 2012, President Obama will be probably in better shape in Virginia, though they'll have to work harder with an opponent in the governorship as opposed to the supporter that Obama had in Tim Kaine. It really matters if you have a governor organizing for you on the ground and putting your events together. It makes it a lot easier, and now Obama's going to have somebody in Richmond who will work every single day to see that he's defeated for re-election in 2012.
Were you surprised by the margin of McDonald's victory and by the size of that swing from Obama's victory last year to the Republicans this year?
Well, not by Election Day. I mean, my prediction was 57-43, which was off by 2 points because it was 59-41.
You see, I knew you were always right.
There you go. I'm just being honest there, Caddy. But it's a landslide. I mean, whether it's 57-43, 59-41, it's a landslide. But again, let's remember who showed up. This was a fundamentally Republican electorate. In fact, it was the most disproportionately Republican electorate in my lifetime in Virginia. So that gives you a hint. You know, when you have Republicans showing up in droves and Democrats not bothering to vote, probably the Republicans going to do very well.
Okay, Larry, stay on the line. I know we've got you for a few more minutes. I want to bring in our guests here in the studio, Jeff Garin, Democratic pollster, Whit Ayres, Republican pollster. John Harris is also with me. He's Editor-in-Chief of Politico. In a few minutes, we'll also be opening the phones here, 1-800-433-8850 is our phone number. Do call with your questions and comments. And you can send us an email at drshow@wmu.org. Whit Ayres, listening there to what Larry Sabato was saying, this sounds to me, from what Larry is saying, is it's not so much a victory for Republicans or a defeat for Democrats as a defeat for the process of people turning out.
I don't think so, Caddy. I think this is a huge victory for Republicans. It's a blowout victory that carried all the way down the ballot. And it's a precursor of what could happen in 2010, because the fundamental structure of the electorate, as Larry was talking about, was very, very different this year than it was last year. The proportion of young people in the electorate collapsed from 21% last year to 10% yesterday. The proportion of the electorate made up of African Americans dropped from 20%. 20% to 16%. This electorate yesterday looks a lot more like a non-presidential year electorate than a presidential year electorate, and that's likely to carry through in the non-presidential election year of 2010.
So, Jeff, where was Obama's army? Not motivated? They didn't show up?
Well, you know, I don't think this is a shocking phenomenon. You know, I think there was a lot of evidence, even at the time of the presidential election, that these people were Obama-sized more than they were politicized, and so that they really showed up for him rather than have gotten really involved in the political process or in other kinds of ways. You know, the die was cast on this early. It's not that there was something about the McDonnell campaign that turned Republicans on or the Deeds campaign that turned people off. We did a survey right after after the primary when Cree Deeds was still riding high, and among people who were certain to vote, that was an electorate that was about 8 points more pro-McCain than pro-Obama from 2008. So this really started early on. The one thing that I think is I think there are a lot of notes of caution for Democrats in Virginia, and we ought to take those very seriously. The one thing I would say about Virginia is if you look at the campaign that Bob McDonnell ran, he ran as a problem solver. He ran as the jobs candidate. He ran as somebody up here in Northern Virginia who would do something about transportation. That is not who the Republicans in Congress are. They are still very much defined as the party of no, the party against government, the party against Obama. And that approach of solving problems works well, but that approach at the congressional level, and we saw this in New York 23, of just saying no, of just being against government, really does not work. And in that respect, I think that there are some sobering notes for the Republicans as well.
John Harris, listening to what's been said about the race in Virginia, how do you compare it to the Republican victory yesterday in New Jersey?
I think both are significant, but I think nationally Virginia is far more significant. Corzine was an incumbent race, and he's been unpopular in the polls for a long, long time, and that caught up with him even in a Democratic state. Virginia is important because, as Larry said, it is now a swing state. The White House last night said President Obama wasn't even following the returns. I guarantee you he and his people this morning are huddled over those returns. There's always a danger of over-interpreting an off-year race, but I would say there's also a danger of under-interpreting it. Virginia's electorate has a lot of important similarities to the electorates throughout the Upper South in particular. Throughout the Ohio River Valley. These are precisely the areas where Democrats took back the Congress in 2006 and in 2008. So if you are one of those people that took a Republican seat in those two big, big elections, I guarantee you are looking at Virginia and saying, what do I need to do now? So I think it has big near-term implications, even before 2010, if you're one of those new Democrats saying, what do I think about how closely to embrace Obama or distance him? What do I think about the global warming debate and cap and trade legislation? What do I think about health care reform and a public option?
Okay, we'll get a little bit more on to what the implications are of the elections, but I want to go back to Larry Sabato. Larry, in retrospect, is there more the president could have done to help either Deeds or Corzine up in New Jersey, or is the message for Democrats from yesterday, essentially, you're on your own, that Obama's coattails aren't strong enough to get you back into office?
I think it's more the latter. I think the president did everything he could for John Corzine. He didn't do everything he could for Cree Deeds, but there's a reason for that. For more than half the campaign, Cree Deeds didn't want him to. You know, he called himself a Cree Deeds Democrat rather than a Barack Obama Democrat, which in retrospect was wrong. It was a mistake in a long list of mistakes that the Deeds campaign made. But, you know, on the whole, I still go back to the fundamentals, and it's always who shows up in life and in politics. And Virginia, I agree totally with what John Harris said. Virginia is the key swing state. It's the new Peoria, we used to say in the Nixon administration. Will it play in Peoria? Well, Virginia was the closest to the national average for Obama in 2008. Virginia gave Obama 52.6% of the vote. The nation gave Obama 52.9% of the vote. Of the 50 states, Virginia was the closest. It is a purple competitive state. I've already heard Republicans incorrectly saying, oh, Virginia's red again. Last year, I heard Democrats incorrectly say, Virginia's now blue. Virginia is the ultimate purple competitive state. And I think the party that wins Virginia, particularly in a presidential election, but maybe even in a midterm election, will be the winning party nationally.
So, Larry, listening to what John was saying about the risks of both underinterpreting and overinterpreting the results of these elections, which do you think is the bigger risk? Are they more important than we think, or are they actually less of an indicator than we think?
They're always misleading to some degree. Of course, you know, being in the business of election analysis, as those other three there are, I'm always in favor of overinterpretation.
Keeps you employed.
Interpretation that should last for weeks and weeks and weeks. So, you know, but look, obviously, you don't want to take two races or even three, if you count the New York congressional, and extrapolate too much from them, because this was not a national sampling of opinion. But at the same time, if you dismiss them, as John was suggesting, if you dismiss them too quickly, then you miss the lessons and the other party may learn those lessons.
And to what extent should the Obama White House be thinking that this was a referendum indeed on them?
Well, I hate that word, referendum. I hope all of us could agree. The only referendum on an incumbent president is his reelection, when his name is on the ballot. Our system doesn't allow for referendums other than that. So this wasn't a referendum. On the other hand, it's wrong to say that because of that one exit polling question, which I thought was poorly done and has been misinterpreted, that somehow Barack Obama had nothing to do with the results. Well, to the contrary, there were reasons why Republicans showed up in droves and Democrats didn't, and some of the reasons related to President Obama and his policies.
Okay. Larry Sabato, founder and director of the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. Larry, thank you so much for joining the Diane Rehm Show.
Thanks a lot, Katie.
We will continue our conversation after this short break. The phone number is 1-800-433-8850. You can also send us your emails with questions and comments to drshow@wamu.org. Welcome back. I'm Katty Kay of the BBC, sitting in for Diane Rehm. We are talking about yesterday's elections across the country, the off-year elections and the results and what they mean for the Democrats and the Republicans and, of course, for the White House as well. I'm joined here in the studio by Jeff Garin. He's Democratic pollster with Peter Hart Associates. Whit Ayres is with me. He's a Republican pollster. And John Harris is here. He is editor-in-chief of Politico. Whit Ayres, to what extent are Republicans this morning thinking, right, we're looking at 2010 and we're looking at significant improvements in our standing on Capitol Hill?
Most Republicans are definitely looking for a very good year in 2010. There are several reasons for that. One of the most important is that the results yesterday will really help with candidate recruitment. We'll be able to get stronger, better candidates as a result of the results yesterday. There are lessons for Republicans in this that I hope everyone takes away. One is that when Republicans talk about the issues that people actually care about, as Jeff Garin mentioned, jobs, taxes, roads, education, they win. When they split their base, as they did in New York 23, they lose. So there's some very clear lessons that I hope all Republicans take away from the results yesterday.
Are they going to be looking at New York 23? And we haven't really discussed this, John Harris. And Republicans who are at the process seem to be in the middle of a fight between moderates and conservatives. To what extent do you think they're going to come out of New York 23 and think the center is the way to start heading? And is that going to diminish then the appeal of people like Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, who endorsed Hoffman up in 23?
Well, I don't know that it is. I think the appeal of Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, and others who speak to this clearly very aggrieved, very motivated segment of the conservative party, conservative movement. I wouldn't even say the Republican Party, because I think much of this energy in politics that we saw there, and we've seen it in numerous other contexts, is disconnected from party. There's as much hostility toward establishment Republicans as there is establishment Democrats.
So it was more an anti-incumbent
move. Segment is still there and strong, but it's narrow. And I think any party that organizes itself around a narrow segment of the electorate is going to face a problem. So there's clearly a big schism in the Republican Party between people who believe what Ayers believes and people who don't really care what Ayers or anybody in the sort of Washington professional class or the Republican establishment broadly cares. They're almost as angry at establishment Republicans as they are at Obama or Nancy Pelosi.
So the mood amongst those conservatives who say, even if we're going to lose to a Democrat, as we did in New York, indeed, yesterday, we are going to stick to our principles and carry on opposing moderate Republicans and putting up conservative Republicans, that's not going to change.
I think there will be people within the Republican Party or within the conservative movement who do advocate that. We have to remember that the circumstances in New York 23 were fairly distinct. She was nominated by a group of establishment Republicans, so that laid the basis for people who were aggrieved by that kind of backroom choice to take it out. The conservative party has an actual place on the ballot in New York, which it doesn't in most states, or as far as I know, any other states. So those were very distinct circumstances. But the political energy represented by the people who backed Doug Hoffman, represented by Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, and others, it's real.
Jeff Garin, let's talk a little bit about what these results mean now going forward, especially for the Democrats. If you are a moderate Democrat, one of the so-called blue dogs, what are your choices now when it comes to how closely, as John Harris was suggesting earlier, you want to align yourself with Barack Obama, particularly on the health care issue?
Well, I don't know that I completely agree with Larry Sabato earlier that people were thinking about this in terms of, are you pro-Obama or anti-Obama? I was surprised. I've been doing focus groups around the country about—
You think it is more of a referendum on the president?
No, I think it is that is not how people are thinking of it. Larry, I think, correctly said it wasn't a referendum, but he said Obama was more important than reflected in the exit polls. I've been going around the country and expecting people to be talking about Obama when they talk about 2010, and instead they are talking about the Congress. They are talking about politics as usual. That's really what they are much more angry about. Look, I think that we've been through this enough to know that, you know, Democrats will rise or fall together. That, you know, people are very hard. Are hardly ever successful when they sort of head for the tall grass. But look, I think that that whether you're a moderate Democrat or any other kind of Democrat, I think that we need to be in sync with what people think about the role of government is, and that's really, I think, central to all of this. That Barack Obama's election in 2008 did not repeal voters' skepticism about government effectiveness. They want government on the playing field, and they don't think Republicans do want government on the playing field. But they have not lost their skepticism about government. And so that, you know, whoever gets this right in 2010 will do better. The one other thing I think Democrats will take away from yesterday is that you've got to be playing offense. You just can't play defense in these elections.
But if you are a moderate Democrat who was elected in last year's election, a member of Congress, in a seat, say, in the South or in the Ohio Valley, which had been traditionally Republican, aren't you going to be waking up this morning feeling a little bit nervous about voting in favor of a sweeping health care reform bill that many of your constituents see as too much big government again?
Yes, I think. I think it's in the nature of politicians to wake up feeling nervous. I think it's what they
do
habitually. And sure, I think that this will be a challenge. But look, I think the other important event yesterday is that the Republicans in the House introduced their health care bill, and it was a ridiculous bill. It does nothing about pre-existing conditions. In fact, it makes it more expensive for people who have pre-existing conditions. It barely expands coverage, but it does have some cost, but with no pay for, so it increases the deficit. I think what Democrats ought to be waking up and doing is say, look, 2010 can't be a referendum on us. We really need to pose it as a choice and take on the Republicans.
Wait.
Nancy Pelosi has said she doesn't mind sacrificing some Democratic seats in order to get health care through. The Democrats on the chopping block probably have a different perspective on that, and they better be very nervous. If you don't think the national climate had something to do with the outcome yesterday, just listen to the words of Cree Deeds in John Harris's publication on October the 7th. He said, frankly, a lot of what's going on in Washington has made it very tough. We had a very tough August because people were just uncomfortable with the spending. They were uncomfortable with a lot of what was going on, a lot of the noise that was coming out of Washington, D.C.
So, John Harris, does the results from yesterday make it harder for the president to get his agenda through now, particularly when we're looking at health care?
I think it's unambiguously true that it does. I still think it's more likely that health care will pass in one form or another than not. But the final form of that has been and remains very fluid. And I think these results yesterday are going to factor into that fluidity and increase it. So, yes, it makes it harder. And I think in terms of cap-and-trade legislation to affect global warming, which is an administration priority for the first part of next year, I think that really puts that in a more difficult light. And it was already a difficult light.
I do think one thing that Democrats do feel waking up today is that we've better get back onto the economy and jobs and have a laser-like focus on those issues, because that's what is concerning the public. I think the takeaway is not so much about health care, because, look, there is a downside to failure as well as passing something that the public thinks is too big. But, in Virginia, for example, Bob McDonald spent more time talking about jobs than Cree Deeds did. That really doesn't work politically for Democrats and won't work in 2010. We have to be the party of jobs and be the party of getting people back to work. And we cannot cede that ground to the Republicans at all.
Okay, the results of this election, of course, also coincide with the one-year anniversary of last year's general election. John Harris, you have a piece in Politico this morning. The title is Change Has Come or Has It? Is the message of yesterday that maybe we can't?
Barack Obama is a change agent. And to me, as I take stock of his first year, there's two sort of contradictory impulses at work. He is clearly a man of epic ambition who does not want to do small things. He wants to do big things and put a big imprint on his country. In that sense, he does have the soul of an ideologue, but that competes with the other part of Barack Obama. He has the soul of a political operative. I've been struck the way that his epic ambition coincides with fairly conventional political calculations and a fairly conventional, familiar style in terms of how he conducts his presidency. I do think one thing that ties this together, Obama's first year and the results on Tuesday, is to me it does call into question the so-called Big Bang theory that they laid out at the beginning of the year. We're going to do everything. We're going to pass health care. We're going to pass the stimulus. We're going to do financial re-regulation, global warming, and we're going to do it in a compressed period of time. The theory being we've never got more momentum than this. I think there was reason to be skeptical of that, and there's more reason after these results. People are concerned about the economy, and they don't see Democrats and they don't see Obama focusing single-mindedly on the economy, and they're clearly concerned about spending. The public plainly in 2008 was ready to embrace a broader, more interventionist role for the national government, but they still want it done prudently, and they want it done with an awareness of the costs. If you look at the flight from independence from Obama last year in 2008 to Republicans this year in 2009, that's pretty dramatic. Obama won them big last year. McDonald won them big this year.
Okay, let's go to an email here. We've got Kaylin has written us from Arlington, Virginia. The media and the Republican Party have already started spinning the outcome of the Virginia elections as a referendum on President Obama. As a resident of Northern Virginia, I think that the outcome of the elections was more a failure of the Virginia Democratic Party than a reflection of public opinion on the current administration. The Democratic Party didn't run a candidate that Democrats could get excited about, and that's why they lost the election. Jeff Guerin.
Well, as I said, everybody was excited about Cree Deeds the day after the primary, and there's nothing quite so sobering as a defeat, and you kind of rethink the world after all of that. But look, in terms of President Obama, the one thing I would point out is that this was a more Republican electorate in the exit poll. These folks voted for John McCain by 6 points, not for Barack Obama. But even in an electorate that voted for McCain by 6 points, Barack Obama still had a majority approval rating. So I do think there's a lot of evidence that this is not an anti-Obama election per se in New Jersey or in Virginia.
In Virginia, Caddy, you don't vote for a straight ticket. You get to vote for separate ballots of governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general. Democrats lost them all big. And Republicans also picked up, I think it's 5 seats at the latest count in the General Assembly. So it reverses basically an 8-year trend taking the state back further to the Democrats. So I think that says something.
I'm Caddy Kaye of the BBC. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join us, please do call 1-800-433-8850 or send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. We're going to go to the phones now to Liz in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Liz, you've joined the Diane Rehm Show. Liz, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We can, yeah.
I really think that this is not a rejection of the Democratic Party so much as a rejection of Blue Dog Democrats. Cree Deeds ran away from Obama. However, if you look at California's 10th, they're a more liberal Democrat ended up getting the seat. I really think that the message here is you can't beat the Republicans by joining them. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Liz, thank you very much. John Harris, you can't beat Republicans by joining them, Liz asks.
That's true, and it was inevitable. There's always a debate, really within both parties, but with the Democrats, like, hey, if we had just stuck more to our the sort of pure old-time religion, we'd do better. I would say the only thing countering to that is, and I talked to several prominent Democrats in Virginia down in Richmond last night, including several people who have won statewide, they typically don't respond that way. They feel like the message is Democrats have to own the center, and when they don't, they're imperiled. Incidentally, most of the Republicans I was talking to said the same thing. I do think this is a country that's won in the center, not by sort of emphasizing either ideological purity or sort of complete loyalty to a cult of a particular president or politician.
Let's go to Jeff in Norfolk, Virginia. Jeff, you've joined the program.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment, and I'm sorry, one of your guests, I'm not sure which one, said that the incoming Democrats from the last election were going to go, that replaced Republicans, were going to go home after this election and take a look at their beliefs on the issues. And to me, that's very disheartening. And I think it breeds contempt and resignation among the voters and the people that don't vote. That I know it's probably naive, but to have the outcome of an election change your beliefs about issues. Your beliefs should be your beliefs, regardless of the outcome of an election. So I think that very fact, and it's probably true, is what keeps a lot of the voters away, or the non-voters away from the polls. It's very disheartening.
Jeff,
I'll take your comments.
Jeff, thank you. Very interesting point there. I was down in Florida, Jeff Guerin, just last week talking to voters, and many of them were saying, listen, we should get rid of the whole bunch. There's definitely an anti-incumbent, anti-politician, anti-Washington mood in the country at the moment.
I think that is definitely the case, and much more important to what happened yesterday than anything else. Look, if you were one of the ins yesterday, you generally didn't do very well. And, you know, in the Democrats have governed Virginia for the past 8 years. John Corzine was the incumbents in local races around the country.
And Jeff, to some extent, that's always true in off-year elections, but was it more marked this time?
It is true in a moment when people are very unhappy with the status quo. All of the things that impelled independents to be for change 2 years ago still impel them to be for change now. And the fact is that that the Democrats are running things, and we have to be able to deal with political realities in that context.
So the shakeup that Barack Obama promised in Washington, a new way of doing business, a new way of doing politics, people aren't convinced that they've got it.
Right. And the irony is people still believe that Barack Obama is that person, but the Congress is so different from Barack Obama that in some ways he accentuates the things that people don't like about Congress. And they end up taking out a lot of the frustrations on the Congress, but still hold the president in some high regard.
Jeff Garin is the Democratic pollster for Peter Hart Research Associates. Whit Ayres is Republican pollster of Ayres, McHenry & Associates. John Harris is also with me. He is editor-in-chief of Politico. We're going to continue our conversation after this short break. The phone number is 1-800-433-8850. Do join us with your questions and comments and send us that email to drshow@wmu.org.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy, by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org, and by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe on the web at germany.info. This is NPR.
It may be best known as the land of Olympic gymnasts, bleak orphanages, and Dracula, but Romania today is in fact a flourishing democracy. A former U.S. ambassador on why Romania thrived after the fall of communism and lessons for other budding democracies. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. I'm Cathy Kay of the BBC sitting in for Diane Rehm. You've joined our discussion on the results of the elections yesterday. And of course, it is the year anniversary of last year's general election as well. Whit Ayres, I wanted to get back a little bit more to this race in New York 23. We were talking about it earlier, where you had a conservative Republican being beaten by a Democrat in a state, in a district that hasn't voted for a Democrat in decades. To what extent is what happened in New York 23 going to shake up the Republican Party, and particularly the battle that is going on between the moderate part of the Republican Party and the conservative wing of it? John Harris was talking about it earlier, but I wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah, the combination of what happened in New York 23 with a split party and what happened in Virginia with a united party around a conservative candidate is a stark lesson in how you lose and how you win. But John made the point earlier how unique New York 23 is, where you have a guaranteed place on the ballot for the independent, coupled with a Republican nominee who's not just moderate, but liberal. I mean, she was not only pro-choice, but pro-gay marriage and pro-card check. You're not going to have that kind of scenario recreated very often around the country next year.
Right. But you are going to continue to have, as John was suggesting, this debate between conservatives and moderates. It doesn't sound like people like Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh are going to go away from 23 and think, well, maybe actually we can't win with marginal candidates, with right-wing candidates, conservative candidates.
Chris Christie in New Jersey defeated a more conservative candidate in the Republican primary, and he's now the governor of New Jersey. There are stark lessons here. When you unite, you win. When you split, you lose. And that doesn't mean that you don't give strong...
But we have Sarah Palin this morning on her Facebook page saying, this movement continues. We shouldn't be disheartened. We are going to carry on doing and saying the things that we've been doing.
Of course, the Republican Party needs to capture the energy of the Tea Party movement and the angry folks on the right and couple them with the people that Bob McDonnell brought into the coalition. And he won a thumping victory by bringing them all together in the same coalition. That's how you win in American politics.
Good luck with that.
I know. And you've got your problems on the left, too. So.
Problems for both parties, it seems, coming out of this election. Let's go to an email that we have from Maine. How about some analysis of the gay marriage vote in Maine? We've heard plenty about New Jersey and Virginia. There were, of course, as we know, other amendments yesterday. John Harris.
You know what? I've been so immersed in
down
in Virginia,
Jersey,
just
Virginia.
Driving up in Richmond. I would rather hear one of these pros talk about them.
Either of you want to take on this?
Everywhere gay marriage has been on the ballot, it's lost.
Okay, let's go to David in Little Rock, Arkansas. David, you joined the Diane Rehm Show.
Good morning, Caddy. Hey, this is a time for, you know, some real leadership on the part of the Democrats. I agree with the previous caller that you can't beat the Republicans by joining them. They're organized. They have the same talking points. They've got the language down, and they are going to beat you if you don't stand up for something. The worst thing a Democrat can do is equivocate. We have a classic example of that here in Arkansas with Ruth Lincoln. She thinks that she can hide out and pretend to be deliberating about these issues, deliberate, not take a stand, and be afraid of disenfranchising the people who aren't going to vote for her anyway. And in the process, she's losing her Democrat, or she has lost her Democratic base. She did that on the card check issue, and now she's doing it on health care. And, you know, I'm not going to vote for Ruth Lincoln if I'm, you know, I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I am not going to vote for her, even if I'm standing there in the booth. I'm certainly not going to turn out to a polling place to vote for Ruth Lincoln, because she doesn't represent anything, much less democracy or the Democratic ticket. And I think that's a whole lot of what was going on in Virginia, too. Plus, you turn out to vote when you're dissatisfied. And I think the Democrats are pretty generally satisfied with the way things are going right now. So they were not as motivated as the dissatisfied Republicans. But hopefully Ruth Lincoln will have a good primary candidate against her, and we can put somebody in there that actually acts and talks like a Democrat, and we can rally our base and get them out and keep a Democrat in that position.
Okay, David, thanks very much for your call. Jeff Garin, it seems to me that this is the mirror discussion of what's happening in the Republican Party. And we've got several emails here, several phone calls that have come in saying the problem for Democratic candidates is when they are too timid.
Yes, although the opposite of timid is not necessarily being liberal. It is having clarity in your views. I think that is as a personal characteristic. People don't like politicians who equivocate or seem uncertain, or put their finger in the wind. I think they want to be represented by people who have a clear point of view and clear set of principles. But that, as a personal characteristic, it somehow, in some ways, transcends the ideological nature of the point that the caller was making. And so that when politicians seem equivocal. They do it at some peril.
Talking of people who are clear in their views, there's one race that we haven't mentioned, which was, of course, that for the mayor of New York City last night. Jeff, you polled for the challenger, William Thompson. He had a pretty good night, didn't he?
Well, I believe in real victories and not in moral victories, but this comes pretty close to
even when you're up against that much money?
Yes, it was about $100 million to a little over $5 million, so that we were slightly outgunned. But, you know, there's a a lesson there as well. People really felt that Michael Bloomberg did the wrong thing when he overturned term limits. They did not want to reward him for that bad behavior. They felt that, you know, that economically that New York City is becoming more and more unaffordable for middle class people, and Bloomberg did not acknowledge that. And, you know, frankly, by the end of the campaign, people were just offended by the amount of money that he was spending. The Thompson campaign had fewer resources, but they, you know, he stayed on message and really got some momentum in those final days.
I want to read an email here from Carrie in Cincinnati, who writes, "How exactly does the rather shocking, to use your panelist term, loss of the conservative candidate in New York factor into the supposed comeback of Republican gubernatorial candidates elsewhere? I'm rather inclined to think that perhaps voters are voting on their individual candidates for their individual areas rather than voters embracing party politics. I think voters are gravitating towards the middle ground overall. Why else would Obama remain popular where Republicans won governor's races?" John Harris.
Well, I think that is almost for all times true that the individual characteristics of candidates matter most. And there's no reason to mince words. Creed Eads in Virginia seems to be an honorable public servant. He's well-respected in Richmond, but he was a terrible candidate. He just had poor candidate skills. But again, they lost up and down the ballot, not just Creed Deeds. So I would say, look, being a good politician is not an easy thing. To do what Bob McDonald did in Virginia, which is his conservative base had no doubt who he was and what he stood for and that he was with them. He's every bit as conservative as Sarah Palin and has been at it a good bit longer than she has. They had no doubt about that, but he was also able to successfully position himself to be attractive to independent candidates. There's a reason the good politicians win and bad politicians don't. I think some of the calls don't necessarily appreciate the difficulty that people like Blanche Lincoln have or any politician has in genuine swing districts, positioning themselves to be consistent with their own values, but not out of step with the electorate. It's not easy.
But we ought to be clear on this. Bob McDonald did not talk the Sarah Palin talk in this race. He sounded more like Barack Obama a lot of times than he did like Sarah Palin. He talked about his ability to work across party lines to get things done. He focused on mainstream issues. When he was attacked on his master's thesis, he said, "Oh, that was the old Bob McDonald. That happened way in the past. I can't even remember having written that." He did not run a Sarah Palin campaign. And the other thing that we ought to remember is the difference between running for governor and running for Congress is governors, by the very nature of the job, have to do something, and they have to be for something when they run. For Republicans who are running for Congress right now, their inclination is just to be against things, to be against the Obama agenda. And so far in the three special elections we've had this year, that has not proven itself to be a winning ticket.
Whit.
Bob McDonald got an overwhelming proportion of the Republican vote. Creed Eads got an overwhelming proportion of the Democratic vote. Bob McDonald had a blowout victory because he won independent 66-33. And we underestimate, I think, the effect of some of the policy choices that the Democrats have made in Congress on that. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot of polling through Resurgent Republic, an organization I started with Ed Gillespie, former RNC chair. And back in April, we saw that independents were looking a lot more like Republicans than like Democrats on fiscal issues. That's continued on through all the bailouts, through the health care debates, where independents now look like Republicans more than Democrats. That's unlike 2006 and 2008. That's why there was such a huge turn yesterday. And that's where the warning signals are for the Democrats. If they continue to play to their base rather than to the independents in the middle, they're going to have a real bad 2010.
But is the McDonald message for Republicans that you can come from the base and win independence if you're clever about it, as John Harris is suggesting?
Exactly. You said it beautifully.
Is that it, John? I mean, is McDonald the person that Republicans should be watching in the run-up to 2010?
Well, I think there's some pretty good lessons, and it wasn't like he was – it's true that he didn't run as Sarah Palin, but because the emphasis on his master's thesis was so prominent, and Deeds did everything he could
although
to make it
Although he then surrounded himself in pictures with lots of women in the picture and his
That's
family.
Right, but I don't think you can say how McDonald snuck his views through customs somehow because his people knew where he stood, and Deeds made his best effort to make sure that people in the middle knew where he stood or at least had stood in the past. So – I do think that McDonald shows that these sort of opposing these tensions within the Republican Party can be reconciled by candidates with good candidate skills.
Okay, let's go to John in Greensboro, North Carolina. John, you've joined the Diane Rehm Show.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to pick up on something that one of the guests just said.
Mm-hmm.
If you put in a lot of polls that I've seen, if you put the policies of the Democrats and by extension Obama out there without a name next to it, they are unpopular. That's why health care is not going to get done till next year if it gets done at all. That's why cap and tax is not going to get done probably ever. Because when you put these things out, when you ask, is Barack Obama popular? Yes. He's a talented, charismatic politician. I think he's a snake oil salesman, but he is popular. But when the policies are put there, they are unpopular. And that's why I think in 2010, Democrats are headed for a disaster.
Okay, John, thank you very much. I'm Katty Kay. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And do join us on 1-800-433-8850 or send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Jeff, I want to put John's comments to you.
Well, I have a different polling sense of what happens when you put Barack Obama's policies up for people that, you know, the polling pretty consistently, when you take the name away, that people support having a public option in health care, for example, pretty consistently, and they want to do something rather than nothing on health care. There is a strong sense in the country about the need for energy reform. I think it is not so much the details of the policies, but kind of how people add it all up and what they think of what it represents about a vision of government. And, you know, one thing I think that we have a challenge to do as Democrats moving into 2010 is really to stop and be very mindful about what is it we want to say to the voters about what we believe about the role of government, you know, what it is and what it isn't. I think it's the same thing for the Republicans. They have the same challenge as well. I think neither party, you know, right at the moment is where the center of gravity is in America.
Jeff, we've talked a lot about yesterday's elections and about turnout and how turnout was so low, particularly in Virginia. What does the Democratic Party do to try and re-energize its voters for 2010. I remember during the campaign, one person who worked on the Obama campaign saying to me, this is an Obama victory almost more than a Democratic victory, and congressmen and women are going to listen to Obama because they're going to want his help. But if Obama can't help them, and he can't in and of himself re-motivate all those young people, those African-Americans, those Hispanics, the surge voters who got him into power, how are the Democrats, how is each individual Democratic candidate going to try to get the voters out, because they didn't show out this time.
Right. And look, this is not a new invention. We had a runoff election for the U.S. Senate in Georgia a couple of weeks after the presidential election, and no Democrats showed up for that either. So, you know, this is not happening for the first time.
But the situation is worse now for Democrats because they've been in power for that much longer.
It is true. Look, I think that you know, frankly, the task for Democrats for 2010 is really to make it clear to people what the consequences would be of electing more Republicans to the Congress. That, you know, that you end up with health care bills that not only don't do anything about pre-existing conditions, but make it more expensive for people who have pre-existing conditions, that do nothing about curbing health insurance abuses. That so I think that, you know, that it has to be a contrast and not a referendum.
Okay, we have just a couple of minutes left. I want to ask each of you what you think the biggest factors are going forward into the 2010 elections. Whit Ayers, what should Republicans be looking for?
They should be looking for how they unite around a set of principles like Bob McDonald, and they should be looking forward to an electorate that's far more Republican-friendly than it was in 2008.
Jeff Garin, what do Democrats need to look out for, and what do they need to be focusing on going into those midterm elections?
Well, they need to be focused on jobs and the economy, and they need to be pretty aggressive in framing the contrast with and the choice with the Republicans and not just playing defense.
Okay, John Harris, you get the final minute to wrap up what we should have learned from yesterday's elections and what both parties need to be
thinking
about.
Again, to me, the whole ballgame is the Democrats who won Republican seats in 2006, 2008. Where are they? I think Jeff had it exactly right earlier. The country in those years took a step leftward, but it did not abandon skepticism of government, and independents really feel that if the Democratic Party in Washington stands for a, kind of an aggressive and heedless activism that's expensive, like that's trouble. If they stand for a sort of a disciplined, problem-focused, economy-minded brand of government activism, it's probably that's where the center of the country is.
Sounds like your focus is going to be on the Democrats for the next few months.
Absolutely.
John Harris, editor-in-chief of Politico.com, with Ayres Republican pollster at Ayres McHenry & Associates, has been here with me too, as has Jeff Garin, Democratic pollster with Peter Hart Research Associates. Gentlemen, thanks all very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm Catty Kay of the BBC, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Thank you all so much for listening.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.